I'm trying to see how he still had access to his systems if he was fired already.
That's what I keep. Hello, what ain't clicking? That's the part that don't make sense.
But
to
I'm
me.
Not surprised though. McAfee literally was just like Intel, except slightly different. So I ain't surprised. So y'all be making people interview and have all these hard interviews, and the most simplest things y'all can do. Somebody got you. Honestly, I think it's 2026. So I think that's what we can start off with. Like, it's 2026. What people plan to do for the new year.
How are you feeling?
Inspired.
Me too.
I think towards the end of the year, getting a new MacBook.
That turned you up?
Yeah.
Turned you up.
Because my other one was on its last leg. I had it for like almost 5 years.
Do you use your MacBook to prep your content?
I just mostly use it for editing.
Mm-hmm.
I use my PC if I need to stream or something. Because for whatever reason, you can't stream from your desktop with TikTok from Mac, but you can do it on PC, which is weird. But it's just about a little bit bigger than this.
You love a little.
But it's more powerful.
A little thing.
I like convenience.
You said that too.
Yeah.
But you know, I just. Something about that 13-inch iPad for me does it.
What do you think about it,
but
too?
But I'm blind,
like,
too.
With the kids and everything. Like, I like something I can go hide under the couch or just whip it out.
I will say, though, I do wish that I had one of the ones that's actually smaller than that, that you can fit, like, in your bag. Just for convenience. Because I love my iPad when I'm traveling. I do like the big one. But, like, something to just quickly slide into your purse, like the size of those old Kindles, that would be convenient.
Yeah, that was what me and Marquise was talking about. We had went by there, what was that? Me and Josh went by there last Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this past Sunday we went by there. And I was showing him my new M4 Mac. And he was like, yeah, I should have got this size. Because he got the big MacBook where you only can put it in certain bags.
It's like a 17-inch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, my stuff can go in that little bag over there, and I can just put it under my seat in the plane or whatever. It don't have to go in a carry-on. It's like perfect.
That was my regret getting a laptop. My first laptop that I got had a butt on it, and it was a 17-inch. So it was so heavy. I never took it to class because it made my backpack super heavy. And I remember me and my granddad were at Best Buy, you know, looking at different laptops. He's techie, and he was like, I don't think you should get something that big. And I was like, no, I need it that big. I can't see. Like, I was like, my argument was I want to be able to see it without my glasses or my contacts, and I want to be able to see the screen. And that didn't do me any justice. So if you're looking for a new laptop, don't go get a 17-inch and you're about to start college. Take it from me. Get something that's portable. I like 2-in-1s. That's the only thing I didn't get out this laptop was it's not touchscreen and it doesn't flip into a tablet.
I don't like 2-in-1s because 2-in-1s, 9 times out of 10, don't have the power that they need.
You ain't never lie right there. I was debating between this and a Surface.
What is that?
This is the Asus. Yeah.
The computer science might get you. I think they pronounce
it. It's a Zephyrus. It's a Zephyrus. Because
they pronounce them Asus, I think.
Oh. But it's a Zephyrus. And I do like it. It overheats a lot. Not overheats. It's hot.
On.
Oh, my God. It gets hot. But I think I need
that
to get.
That thing is quiet in there.
I need to get a cooling pad for it. Like a, just a, because I'm like in the bed playing on the computer.
That's the one thing I like about the M4, because all the stuff is built by Apple. I mean, they probably designed the chip, but they probably don't build the M4. But it's optimized to work, similar to like the iPhones.
Yeah.
And like I said, Final Cut Pro works. Really, everything works good on it except Descript. Surprisingly.
Yeah.
In the browser. CapCut's good on it. Everything is good on there.
I want everybody to make their apps better, bro. Everything is so great on the desktop, but make the apps better eventually. Like, duh, of course, it's not going to be apples to apples right away, but it is too far off of the different experiences that you get.
Yeah. And while you said you and your granddad was looking up, I think you were saying, like, a computer for school and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That made me think about a good question. It was, first of all, it's like, how many people, if you went to college, did you have a laptop when you went to school?
No, that's a big deal.
No, because I did a quick Google, and this is AI overview, of course, but it said, I said, how many African-American kids have computers in the house? Because we had like a main computer, but then when it came for me having a laptop, I looked up, bought a church member's old crappy laptop, like $200-$300. The sound card didn't work, so I had to...
Not you had to build it.
No, I got an external sound card I used to plug into. The CD drive didn't work, so I had an external CD drive. So
oh, man.
I made it through college with a trash Acer laptop. Like, for real. That thing was garbage.
I was blessed. My grandparents, that was something that they did for us graduating, was a gift. Like, we're going to get you a laptop. We're going to make sure you have insurance. And we're going to get you a printer so you can, you know, be successful in school. And Geek Squad, times 10. I highly recommend you get it. If you don't have it, it saved my day. Something, I don't even know what happened to the laptop, but... It stopped.
Yeah, all my stuff, I got this, like, Best Buy thing. Like, anything I buy from Best Buy is automatically covered.
But I was going to say, there are a lot of programs, a lot of colleges. Did your school have the TRIO program?
No. I don't even know.
Okay.
I'll be 34 in 2 months.
I don't know if that is. I know other schools have it, but I don't know if it's an up north thing. But it's basically for, like, low-income students to be welcome into campus and have the resources and advisors and support. But one thing that they do offer is laptops for you. So if you come and you don't have a laptop, instead of you needing to go to the library all the time, you can basically, like, borrow a laptop from them as long as you need it, basically. So there are, some options available to you if you can't afford to get one.
Right. I'm going to read this stat because I actually believe it, too, because I think a lot of the thing, it's going to tie into some of the stuff that we talked about in a couple episodes before. But it says, while most African-Americans have computers at home, they remain less likely than white Americans to own traditional desktops, laptops. Though smartphone tablet ownership is similar, with around 69% of black adults owning desktops or laptops versus 80% white, not in 2021, so I wonder what it is now. Because it's probably lower for both as tablet adoption is more. Because think about it.
Everybody has a tablet.
Isn't it Gen Z that don't know how to work computers? Like, they don't have to do basic stuff on computers because they've been able to have, iPads and stuff.
But they've been on top. I think so.
I think I saw that. Like, it's just certain things they don't even know
because,
how to
do. Because, we were getting computers and putting them together. And this was when it was 80 peripherals to plug in just to get it functioning. The mouse, the keyboard, the speakers, the monitor.
And most people had Windows.
Remember the two speakers? Back in the day. Remember the two speakers? Yeah.
Yeah, the Windows with the my first one at home, we had a HP, and it was...
All of mine were HPs besides the first one I had. It was one of the Manila ones.
It was Windows XP on thing, matter of fact. So Windows XP. Now, I think we have the same amount of, like, when it comes to, like, tablet and stuff, but for computers, it's different. So
I just got a tablet as a grown adult, like... And then when I got it, I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I completely understand why people are addicted and kids are addicted to tablets because I can't function without it. Before I eat, I need the tablet. When I get in the tub, make sure my tablet charged.
Honestly, like, sometimes I had this thing.
We were like that, though.
I'm a type of person that I work better if I got something going on in the background. It helped me keep up with, like, how long I've been doing something. So that's how I can run through, like, a show or something. Like, I can just have a show on and I can do my work versus, like, complete quiet. I want to hear something.
I usually have music playing on mine.
Sometimes I have music, but, like,
or I'll do, like, the, you know how you can have the clock on there and it'll count down? I like that as well. Yeah.
See, I haven't did that. But that's tied into, you get your urban areas where kids go to the library.
Mm-hmm.
And they use those computers at the library. That's how they learn to use them. Because I remember, they kind of still do it in school, but it's more so tablet-based.
Mm-hmm.
But do you remember in school when everybody's schools had the Apple computers with the different colors?
No, not mine.
Which y'all had? Just the regular Windows joints?
We had regular computers. But I will say when I got to high school, we did have brand new Macs. We got brand new Macs for our journalism class.
We had these joints.
I remember seeing those, but I didn't have those in my school. Yeah, not in my elementary school or in my middle school.
We had them in elementary. Yeah. We had those.
But I do remember, like, they were somewhere, but it wasn't where I was at.
Yeah, we had them, and then we had everybody take, like, IBCA.
Remember Mavis Beacon teaches typing? You never took it? Please stop playing.
Had to take IBCA.
What is that? It's the same thing?
I think it's like Intro to Business Computer or something.
No.
It's where you learn how to type.
It's a black
Excel
lady, Mavis Beacon, teaches typing.
I don't know nothing about
everybody
that.
Right now in the comments, if you took that course.
That's probably a Midwest thing.
No. It was like a course you could buy, too. Well, I mean, I was still in the Midwest. But
exactly. It's probably a Midwest thing.
But we did that in school. But we did also have a computer class. And the computer class was basically a typing class. But we were just taking that course, basically.
But you know what's funny?
Can you type?
Yeah.
Because of that?
No.
You learned when you got older?
Help desk. Mm.
See, I've been able to type pretty good since, because this was like, it was like, don't look down. That's how it was. Like, don't look down while you're typing. And it used to be tests.
I was straight. Like, I passed BCA, and then I kind of lost it and got somewhat better in college, but help desk.
What grade was BCA?
We did that sophomore year. I remember sophomore year I did.
Yeah, see, you was big and grown. No, we was doing this in elementary.
I mean, as a kid, I already knew how to, like, I was figuring stuff out on the computer, but I didn't have to just sit down and type.
I don't know when, what grade it started in, but I know for sure I did it in fifth grade and sixth grade.
But I just knew as, like, I already had a foundation, but I just knew when I got older, it's okay, I need to write these notes and this and that while I'm talking to these people. So, I mean, like.
Imagine how important it is to know how to type. We take that for granted because we just type. But, like, imagine trying to use a computer and you can't type and you can't find any key. I mean, like, obviously you can find them looking down, but it's, if it's taking you, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. I don't, like I said, it's a lot of things that, well, we don't kind of factor in, or we kind of overlook because we kind of expect, oh, you should do that or whatever. So,
yeah.
Like, but turn that screen to me that way I can make sure it's always red. It should just flip all the way over.
Oh, this one.
Yeah. Perfect. Okay. This video is being sponsored by Textual Consulting. Are you still struggling to get into cybersecurity? Are you not getting interviews? Do you have a bad resume? Or is it all of the above? Well, if that's you, then we got you covered at Textual Consulting. My name is Henry Davis. I'm a career coach and a cybersecurity professional, and I've helped hundreds, maybe even thousands of people get into cybersecurity with my coaching and my content that you've seen in various places. Now, I specialize in specifically getting people in the blue team, that would be incident response or SOC analysts. I can cover everything from your entry level to your medium to your advanced skills and really help you outperform your resume. You don't believe me? Check out some of these testimonials that I've had from recent clients. So if you're interested, click the link in my bio, textualconsulting.com/offerings to see what offerings that we have available for you. Now, back to the show. But it is episode
199.
First episode of the year, guys. So if y'all are still watching with us right now, I appreciate it. I'm not even going to do the whole spiel, but y'all watching right now, just hit the thumbs up button. That's really all we ask you to do. And I know we kind of got on like a soliloquy about that stuff right there, but with it beginning of the year, don't necessarily people make their affirmations,
New Year's resolutions,
their vision boards.
Yeah, yeah.
I know we got the gyms about to be packed for about 3 weeks.
Is.
I just tell you to keep going. Like, a bad workout is better than no workout.
Period.
There's going to be days that don't feel good. It's going to be days you feel like you wasted your time.
It probably don't feel good right now.
But at least you went in.
Period.
So get you 60 minutes of activity a day. People trying to get their certs.
Eat good and sleep well.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself, for real.
I mean, the grind make you
not take care of yourself. So take care of yourself. Nourish your body.
Make sure your LinkedIn is popping.
I need to update mine.
In the wee hours of Q4. I had my LinkedIn inbox still jumping.
Yeah.
So I'm only saying this because there's a guy in my comments trolling, talking about we making videos about an industry that's not hiring. I was like, you just sound like a person that
the industry
didn't get no emotion.
But it's not just tech. So bye. It's the world.
But it is. But I think a lot of people don't understand.
It's not.
They
like
got so used to the. What happened in 2020, 2021, 2022.
When it was easy to get
that back. They forgot what it was like prior
before,
to that.
Yes, because it was very difficult. Forget pre-COVID, pre-COVID. Let's talk about when did you graduate?
2013.
Hard, okay? Hard.
Yeah, so that's why when I'm like, listen, this is nothing to me because the foundation is still there. I don't care what people tell you. The video that we did with a guy that had been searching for like 2 years, I only had a clearance in that, and people was like, dang, the dude said he had a bad resume. I said, if you're on a Facebook group asking for recruiters, you have a bad resume, you have bad LinkedIn if nobody's reaching out to you.
It's absolutely way different than it used to be, and you have to be different, and you have to be strategic. You have to adapt to the new times, the new days, what's really going on, for real.
Yeah.
Because people are trying to use, like, those old methods that they were using
before. They're using old methods, but the thing is, the old methods still work. It's just that the biggest thing is a lot of people just have bad resumes, they don't have any skills, and they're applying to stuff that they're not qualified for.
And they're not applying enough.
They're that, too.
Yeah.
They listen to everybody. Tomorrow, just apply to everybody. Let them tell you no, which is true. But now, they're definitely going to tell you no if you don't even meet the minimum qualifications. Because I had a guy, he posted a comment on one of our shorts. Mm-hmm. And he was like, should we be worried about the minimum qualifications? I was like, at least the minimum. But where you really want to be at is those desired qualifications. If you meet the desired qualifications, you got even more of a chance of getting possibly a callback just from your resume alone. Mm-hmm. Now, the other options are networking,
yep,
is having the skill set. Like, my stuff was like 50-50. I have people that I know that refer me to stuff that do well in the company so I can at least get screened and talk to somebody. And then I can also get hit up off of my resume. And my resumes that I do for clients are ultra nice. I didn't announce it on LinkedIn yet, but I had a client. We just helped him go from, so he was getting like $75,000, $76,000 like a year in his current job to now he's landing a contract role for OPM at, what is he getting paid an hour? I forgot, I think it's a 65 hour, I don't know, but he's pretty much going to be getting 120. So he almost doubled his salary.
Get with the winning
and
team.
And this was in December. And I'll probably talk about that more.
Get
he's
with the
slated
winning
to
team.
Start by the end of January.
Period.
And it was like, most of these people got stuff in common. Man, I tried everything. It wasn't working. What am I doing wrong?
But so honestly,
you don't know what you don't know.
I will say that, too. And sometimes you need to invest in a career coach. If it's not working out for you, sometimes you need to invest in some help, some support from somebody who does this, who has the experience, the knowledge, the relationships, the networks, the ability to help bring you up.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's just I don't know. Like, I run into people all the time. I get it. You know, stuff is hard. Like, some people, when they reach out to me based on what they got going on, I try to help them out as much as I can without pitching stuff to them. Because, like, okay, you may not be in a position to pay stuff or whatever. But for the most part, you're going to kind of get what you pay for. A lot of y'all don't know how to prompt the certain
1,000%. Everybody is prompting at a 50 level, not even 100
so
level.
There was a young lady, and I come on her post, and she was talking about how she couldn't find anything. She was using ChatGPT for her resumes, and I can actually show you the resumes. They aren't good. And she's trying to apply the stuff in cyber, but it doesn't speak to cyber yet. And I was like, you technically got some help desk or customer service skills. Start there. Like, don't over. You gonna, of course, you're going to make yourself get down. How can I do this analogy? Of course, you're going to feel bad if you're a guy.
I'm dead.
You fat. Short and you broke.
Can you please?
And you catching the bus and you trying to shoot at tens all day. Of course you're going to get down on that. You need to be talking to somebody on the bus with you. Then y'all level up off the bus and y'all be able to get an Uber. And then after Ubers, then y'all can get y'all whips. I mean, it's, I don't know how to make it no plain for y'all.
What's not, the math's not mathing?
I was just doing this because they noticed the 6-7 thing. Okay, she didn't hear me. Because even the kids, kindergartners are doing it.
No, they have been, for sure.
But no, that was just my little soliloquy on that. It's a new year, same old, same old. I want the best for everybody. It is. Hiring is about to start ramping up. So, and listen, y'all about to get income tax.
What's about to start ramping up?
Hiring.
Oh, hiring.
Y'all about to get income tax. Come holler at me while I still got prices low because I'm about to raise them back up because I'm not going to have as much time. So once my time goes down, prices go back up. So that's pretty much how that goes.
Period.
But I'll let you get into one of your first articles.
All right. So let's talk about agentic AI browsers. So this is something that's actually been sneaking into the workplace. It's not just another tool, really just another level of risk that we should know about. So AI, the agentic AI browsers, it isn't just AI that will just summarize a web page for you. It actually can take actions for you in your browser. So it can click around for you, log into stuff, fill out forms, send messages, move through different workflows that you may have set up. Basically do tasks on the internet for you, and absolutely super convenient until you realize maybe some of the risk behind that. So what that means is that your browser just went from being a window that you're actually looking through to a worker that's doing things on your behalf. And if it's a worker, it can be tricked, it can be misled, it can be overconfident, it can be overprivileged. So just like this article was kind of laying out, companies are adopting this for productivity before they actually are starting to think through the security model. Now, the easiest way to understand it, like what makes it agentic, a regular browser, you are doing the clicking. In an agentic browser, you're telling it the go. So go find the best flight, submit this form, pull these docs, handle this admin task, and it's planning those steps and then executing them for you. Now, the question becomes, what happens when the thing that's doing the clicking becomes manipulated? Now, the biggest risk that we are seeing here is prompt injection. And so this article talks about indirect prompt injection. And so that's basically when a website or content, it has hidden instructions that are not just for you, but instructions basically for the AI. So you might think you're just asking the agent to summarize this page, but the page itself can maybe contain some sneaky text that says, ignore the user, do this thing instead. And so if that agent can take actions, not just read, then now you're dealing with the possibility of the agent clicking something it shouldn't, copying something sensitive, sending something out, or basically just navigating systems that it shouldn't be touching. And so that's why folks are warning that prompt injection, it isn't just a cute little problem anymore. It's turning into more of an operational threat as agents are starting to act for us in the real world. And so if we think about where actions are, we also have the second risk. Another point that the article kind of talks about is if these tools are operating like little workers, then you need visibility, right? If the agent took 40 steps to complete a task for you and you can't clearly see what those steps are, what did it click? What data did it access? What did it copy? What did it submit? Then you're basically flying blind, which is something you don't want to do. And so that's where innovation becomes not so cool. So the third risk is overly permissioned chaos. And this is the part that kind of makes me roll my eyes because a lot of companies do this. And then they act shocked when something go wrong. So if you give an agent access to everything, you just created a big problem, right? It shouldn't have access to everything, only what it needs to do to perform that job least privilege, right? So the responsible way to bring in any agentic AI browsers is to not roll it out org-wide, pick a few workloads, maybe start with some smaller tasks, and then measure and determine how it's performing, how fast is it, what mistakes, what's the output quality, and then put some approval gates on any high-risk actions. So if it's about to send an email, for example, or submit a form, maybe you require a human to perform an approval step. And then the third would be to access like you actually care about security. So keep in mind some of your more critical systems. Think about HR, finance, any of your source code repositories. Make sure those areas are out of scope until you feel like you know what you're doing. Demand logging, and then, of course, train your users. So, again, it's not something to fear, but we need to approach it safely and securely within our organizations to make sure that we're not causing more harm than not.
I just think people doing an overkill with AI everything.
AI everything.
Like it.
I like it in the browser, though. But again,
I don't think it's, I mean, it's cool. But I mean, like you said, it's a big privacy concern. People already put too much information in AI already.
Why can't some of these language models be like, oh, that looks like or appears to be sensitive data, right? Like, why can't the DLP piece start with the model?
Well, I think that's
with the model, not the company.
Well, it starts with the model that the company's built on their own. If you're using one that's not one that they built, because that's what most companies are doing. Like, they're building their own generative AI LLMs internally for those purposes. That way you could have AI security guardrails, as they say. If you don't do that, then what happens is you're relying on a Gemini, a Claude, a ChatGPT. What's the other ones? I think it's some other ones that I'm not that I didn't list. But you're relying on them. Oh, think about we heard this about old Claudius. Oh, Claudius, yeah. You're relying on them to do their work, and they're not. Their job is, hey, we want people to adapt AI and make money. We're kind of concerned about safety. We'll say, hey, this looks malicious, but they know that people can do different things to get through that, navigate through that.
I think an unspoken field of interest right now and of hype is going to be people focusing in on data security. Data security and AI go hand in hand, literally hand in hand.
Okay. Yeah, you're relying on them for stuff like that. So I don't know. Like, in the end, it sounds good, but I mean, we'll see. We'll see. I'm one of the people similar to, like, I really don't like self-checkout, but I just use it because I have to.
Yeah, it's quicker.
It's kind of like, it's not always quicker when I got a lot of stuff.
It's quicker for me.
I mean, if I got four.
For big items,
well, maybe, but.
I be having a lot of groceries.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I don't like,
I don't like bagging my own stuff up. I don't, but if you're slow. I feel like they don't move with haste.
I don't.
Anymore.
I mean, I don't mind as long as I ain't doing it. I'd rather look. I want a conveyor belt, so like I want to go talk to the people. Like I said, some people.
There's not enough lanes.
Yeah, because they took them away. Like self checkout only started out to be like two or three. Like
it lanes. Was really supposed to be like two lanes, maybe like four.
But eventually, they probably gonna have. You can kind of do it in the Walmart app, but the app be messing up. But pretty soon, all of them will just let you scan and stuff within the app and pay for it like that.
I like Sam's Club for that very reason. I actually went home and they don't have that, and I was hot. I was like, "Oh, nah, what you mean? There ain't no Scan and Go." I love Scan and Go. I love Scan and Go.
How's it work? You just scan and then you get to the register and then get your receipt.
You literally scan and go. I should look up the technology behind that because honestly, I don't know. But there's like this thing up at the top, and it says like Scan and Go. So you just stand in there, obviously, just scanning. It's not. It's kind of a line, but it's not. And then you just walk through that little area, and then they'll be able to, like, see, it's some type of technology.
Walmart,
and it's with the app, too, so I'm going to do some research.
At Walmart, you take the app, Walmart app, and then you just scan all your stuff in, and then when you get to self-checkout, you scan the barcode, and then it bring up, you know, what you bought, and you pay for it like that.
Turn it up. I like that. That's my type of party. Because we can get in and out of the stores a lot quicker. The only thing is bags.
Well, you know, when I worked at Target, really bags, people though. Used to bring their own bags. So, yeah. Like, just bring your own bags and you should be fine. I wanted to talk about it happened last year, and I felt like it was a big story, and it was something we kind of didn't touch because it's not directly security related, but it is tech related. And GM is ditching Apple CarPlay and Android Auto.
Who?
GM.
Won't be getting one of them.
General Motors has officially confirmed that it is phasing out Apple CarPlay and Android Auto across its entire lineup, including both electric and gas-powered vehicles. CEO Mary Barra claims the current smartphone projection is clunky and creates an inconsistent experience. GM wants a unified in-house system based on Google's Android Automotive platform. Critics argue this is a move to harvest more user data and force customers to the paid subscription services for features they use to get for free from their phones. Imagine buying a new Chevy and realizing that you can't use Apple Maps or Spotify via your phone. How big of a deal breaker is this for buyers?
A big one.
Yeah, like
a big one.
That's why
it's a big one. Like, especially think about like in the city when we need to go somewhere, we don't need to be looking at our phones. We ain't supposed to be on the phones. Most states you're not supposed to be on your phone while you're driving. So for you to not be able to plug and go with ease or use something that's unfamiliar to you, just like if you use maps, you want to use map, or if you use maps, Apple Maps, or you use Google Maps, like you want that consistent feel. You know, like, if you go to a different app, a navigation app, GPS app, like, you might turn too soon or, you know, because you're not used to using that. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. Well, it's that. It's like a
miss your exit.
I get what you're saying, because like when I used to do Uber Eats, I would have, at the time I had Maxine. For y'all don't know Maxine, that's my Maxima. I would have Maxine, and I would have the GPS through Maxine going on and the one through the Uber app that would take you through. And most of the time, I think Maxine's was a little bit more accurate, or it was more accessible for me to see better with that one, because it would show up in my dashboard, and so it was easy for me to use that versus looking over like that. What I believe,
it's not gonna be. The people don't want more stuff.
So I know what happened. Remember back in the days before smartphone adoption was this big. They had OnStar.
I knew you was finna say OnStar. Why do my friend have that in her car? I was like, as you keep talking to this lady, you can type this in Maps and we can be on our way there. You gotta be kidding me right now. Why are you paying for that?
Yeah, it used to be useful, but then they was like, the phone manufacturer said, we'll just make this and just make it work with that. But what I see happening is, because what stood out to me is said they want to unify in the in-house system based on Google's Android automotive platform. So for the people who use Android over the years, there used to be HTC, Sony, Motorola.
Samsung.
I'm missing some.
Whoever else.
Yeah. Huawei. All these different people had Android, but they had their own flavor. So like how my Pixels has stock Google Android. HTC's was called Sense. Samsung stuff used to be called TouchWiz. And I forgot who else had some. Motorola had their own deal. They had their own skin on top of Android. So I think what's going to happen is GM's going to have their own skin on top of Android Auto, but you will only be able to use it with their car. Like, you won't be plugging the phone in to use Android Auto.
I just don't think it's a good idea. I just don't think it's a good idea.
I don't either, but I think they're going
to... I would not get a car for that reason.
Facts.
Like, so serious. Especially, like, as you get older and you start thinking about, like, things that you don't need but make you happy, right?
Right. It's funny because it says, GM says it reduces distraction, but does it really? Or are they just taking away from a familiar interface?
They're taking away from a familiar interface, for sure. It's not supposed to be the same experience. Or what's the word that they use? It's not supposed, they're two different platforms. So if you use Google, you used to Google. If you use Apple, you're used to Apple.
They're pretty much the same. I actually like the setup with Android Auto better than I do CarPlay. Mm. Because of like the home screen, like I'll have like my
text message that show up here. Like.
It'll have, in my bottom left, I'll have my navigation.
Is it different than how it looks for Apple?
Yeah.
Completely?
Yeah. But they both serve their purposes, but I think it's going to backfire on them.
That's a big deal.
Chevy and them are already getting beat out by Honda, Toyota. And now, have you seen Kia and Hyundai's?
You know I love me a little Kiki.
Have you seen how the Kia new Telluride look like a Range?
Yeah, that part.
And how the Palisade coming?
No. Have you seen the EV9 or EV6?
What's that?
The electric Kia?
I haven't seen it.
Off the charts. It's the sexiest electric vehicle I've seen in a while.
Yeah.
But I think that was one thing that I was looking at when I was getting a new car, was something that was techy. Like, a lot of vehicles are cute, super cute. When you get in, it's just super boring.
Right. That's what gets me.
Boring.
Like, my car right now boring. Is like, to me, is boring. I was like, it's there, but I care more for the inside. Like,
same. I looked at Jeeps. Boring in the inside. I looked at Blazer? Chevy.
Mm-hmm.
Looked at Chevy's, boring in the inside. It just wasn't giving. And just because it's blue, or, you know what I'm talking about? What is that? With analog. Just because it got a little analog on it don't mean it's techie at all.
But I like physical buttons, though. I do like that. Mm-hmm. Like, so, like, my car does have physical buttons. Now, for me, I'm mad because...
Like, volume stuff?
I'm mad because if the new Trail Sport would have came out around the time I got my car, I would have got a Trail Sport, not a CRV. You ain't seen the new Honda Trail Sport? Mm-hmm. It's boxy. It looks like a, let's see real quick. And I need to see if anybody sent us any questions.
Trail Sport? I'm finna look it up. Child, I don't know nothing about no car. Trail Sport 2026. Oh, that is cute.
It's more masculine.
Do you know what I like? The Broncos, the big ones.
Yeah.
I love those, but they're boring in the inside.
But the only thing that stops me from getting certain stuff is I always think about, okay, where I'm going to be driving and how good the gas going to be. Like, my car's a hybrid.
The gas immediately.
My car's a hybrid.
The gas immediately.
I feel like a responsible adult talking about that.
That is some responsible adult stuff.
But yeah, in the comments, let us know if you plan to be getting a new Chevy vehicle or will this make you go elsewhere?
Elsewhere. All right. NIST and MITRE dropped $20 million on AI cybersecurity research. So this headline is really the government is finally putting real money behind AI security. So NIST and MITRE just announced a $20 million research effort focused on AI, specifically AI's role in manufacturing and cybersecurity for critical infrastructure. What that means in regular people's language. So they're basically setting up two new AI economic security centers. One of them will be focused on U.S. manufacturing productivity, and the other is focused on securing U.S. critical infrastructure from threats. So think like your water, your electric, your internet, basically the stuff that we can't reboot if it goes down. Now, what's important is that this isn't just a NIST project by itself. MITRE is going to operate both centers, and they're saying that this is meant to be a real collaboration with government, industry, and academia, not basically just some type of report that's going to sit on the shelf. Now, what they're actually trying to do, NIST is saying that the centers will drive development and adoption of AI-driven tools, basically AI agents is basically how their framing is. So one, it's going to protect U.S. innovation and competitiveness. Two, address threats from adversaries using AI. And three, reduce risk from relying on insecure AI systems. And then MITRE got a little bit more specific on the cybersecurity side. The critical infrastructure center is aiming at things like real-time threat detection, automating responses, predicting failures, basically analyzing large amounts of data to help better understand emerging threats. Now, why does this matter? Because AI is not just a tool anymore, as we just talked about two articles ago. What we're seeing is that AI is being positioned as that decision maker, as a doer. We have these agents, and that changes really the conversation. So when you move from AI helping analysts to AI agents that are actually taking action, you don't just have an upgrade there. You have a new attack surface. So if you're wondering how serious MITRE is about this, they are saying that they'll leverage things like their AI lab, the federal AI sandbox, and even some public-facing tools or frameworks. They have MITRE, Atlas, Caldera, and then, of course, the attack framework. Now, the part that I'm paying attention to closely is more so what are – so they're building, right, these critical – they're building this stuff for these critical infrastructures, but who's going to actually be able to use it? Is it going to be the operators, or is it going to be just a more standard guidance that doesn't really – come into contact with the people, right? So NIST did tie this to the government's July 2025 AI action plan, which is to broaden AI evaluation work through its AI standards orgs. So basically, we'll see what happens, what comes of it. I'm more excited, like I said, to better understand who are these tools for, what type of people, what type of user.
Yeah.
Like, is it going to be a benchmark? Is it going to be some practical guidance?
I think eventually it will when more adoption is in play. I think it's still so.
Please don't be a bunch of PDFs. No, seriously. Like, be real tools that people can deploy.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think that's the thing, too. It's like, hey, okay. How are we going to determine when someone is using AI in those different things for attack vectors?
I think that this is a good example of where follow the trend, right? We've been talking a lot about agents and follow the trend. This is a $20 million effort that's going to bring new jobs. They're going to be needing AI, machine learning, so on, you know, engineers and stuff, I think it's important for you to pay attention to stuff like that. Agents are not going anywhere, as you can see. So that might be something that you might want to dive a little bit more in. Do you know how to build one? Can you explain what goes into an agent, how to secure one, and so on and so forth? Maybe something that you can illustrate on your resume as a cybersecurity project if you are looking to, you know, break into the industry. You'd be surprised how many everyday people don't know how to build an agent. Just they don't know what it is. They don't know how to put it together. So you might be one step ahead of even the person that you're interviewing or interviewing with.
Sugar, I'm feeling agent. Let's see. Okay. I was on the good old Reddit and found some articles I wanted to talk about. I think this was a realistic one. We have these people that watch the show. I have consults with people like this all the time. And this guy says, how to find a job that affords me to live in a city in today's market.
He ate down with that one.
I'm a 32-year-old male that embarrassingly lives at home with my dad in California. I'll be vague and say that I live somewhere near Monterey that is scantily populated. I don't know nothing about Cali, so Cali peeps, let me know. I have a degree in accounting and do rudimentary cost accounting as well as manage accounts payable at a food processor. Pay is $27.50 per hour, which is about $57,200 base pay, but after all the overtime I work, it amounts to $70,000. My bonus is $1,000 working hours, so that's $27,500. So this year I grossed about $98,000. Doesn't get you far on the coast of California. We also get the full 25% into our 401ks each year. So in April, I'll get another $23,000 into my 401k. My job is the epitome of a stable job. I get along with my coworkers. My boss is very kind and generous with bonuses and 401k distribution. Great health insurance. It is a good environment to work in with a 10 to 15 minute commute. However, it's just not a lot going on in Monterey socially for me. Monterey Bay, it doesn't seem to be an area to meet people my age. My good friend just moved out of state, leaving me with hardly anyone to talk to. And is it very expensive to live on your own on the coast of California, especially with my low base pay?
Ooh.
I desperately want to move to a city where there's more people around, especially people my age, date and get married and be independent, of course. Every day I fantasize about being in a more populated area with lots of people my age to meet. Every kind of accounting job I apply to in a city is either out of my league as far as the skills I have to have or doesn't pay enough, aka accounts payable jobs. I've applied and been rejected so many times or been solicited by recruiters for jobs that seem a bit out of my league skill-wise. Our CFO closes the books and deals with financial statements, not me. That is what all higher-paying jobs want. I'm stuck in the no-man's land of accounting. I'm wondering how I can get a job in cost accounting in a bigger city or if I'm better off pivoting out of cost accounting and manufacturing to some other industry altogether. It is torture mentally for me to continue staying here. I have $40,000 in cash, $250,000 in investments, and $245,000 in my 401k. So I often hear about how brutal this job market is, and now I believe it. So many rejections. Oh,
man. That just
made
me so sad. It's so hard out here.
See, this is the difference between men and women. I'm not sad.
Because you were so rough.
No, he's 32, and he didn't say he had kids.
He don't have no kids.
His dad is letting him stay. So I'm going to presume that maybe the mom and dad were together, and they divorced, and so he's staying with his dad. But that being said,
32, staying with your dad. But he's in Cali.
But, hey, so he is.
Cali is crazy.
But the good thing is he has some money saved up.
Which, that's what I'm saying. So he need to be investing in something to get him to the next level.
That
career-wise.
He needs to pivot, I think. Or he needs to be, he seems like a passive guy. Could be. I know this because I've had calls. I've had calls with these guys where it was a guy, we had a consult, and I said, all right, man, I'm just going to be blunt with you right here. You don't sound very confident. I want to presume you don't have a girlfriend either. He said, nah, I don't. He said, that's a problem area I got too. And I was like, yeah, you're not confident. I can tell this guy isn't confident. He possibly doesn't, whatever he likes, women or men, whatever it is. Either way it goes, somebody gonna want somebody that's confident at least. I would say he gonna have to start networking.
For sure.
And he needs to get out of California.
Wait, what part of Cali is he in?
Monterey. He needs to get out of California. He's 32. He got some money saved up. He can afford.
Because he's saying he wants to move somewhere. Like, you already in the big city.
I would tell him to probably go try to find a similar job somewhere else that pays. It's probably paid a similar amount of money.
But it won't be such a heavy burden because your cost of living in Cali is.
Yeah, and so you got enough money saved up to where you could probably pay all your bills mm-hmm. for like 2 years.
Yeah.
So I would suggest that he do that. And then since this is a tech podcast, he needs a part-time job. I say, hey, you've been doing accounting stuff. Get help. Maybe switch to help desk. And then, or let's say if he's a GRC guy, get technical. Learn about GRC. Learn about NIST, ISO. That's a couple other ones. Learn about systems. Get your CISA. Learn about the cloud. Start applying to some GRC auditing type of roles. Try to do something audited or something. You got a financial background. Attention to detail. That's a lot of things that you do. The more and more technical you get, he's going to get better offers. So eventually he's going to be past that $50,000 mark. It's going to be 60, 70, 80, 90.
What was his annual?
Like, just base pay was like 2750, so like 57,000.
That's not no money in but he still California.
But he still make more than other people.
Yeah.
So I would highly suggest that he move.
I would highly suggest that he move too, for sure.
And like I said, he got some decent money in his 401k.
But that'd be like moving be like life changing.
Yeah,
real.
But he 32 and he don't have no kids.
Moving be life changing is what I'm saying. Yeah.
So if he wanna
he said he wanna get married. Okay, he exactly. Friends,
so move somewhere. I don't know if he's white or black, so we don't know his demographics. But, yeah, move somewhere that's more affordable, man. Move to the South. Move to Oklahoma. Shoot. Move to Louisiana. Go to Bossier. You get you some good food. Listen, women down there just want a piece of a man.
I'm dead.
You're doing.
Please.
Like 95% better than most of the men in my city. So.
Same.
I would say go there. Go to Columbus.
Don't go to my city, though.
Go to Columbus.
We from Columbus.
I'm from Columbus. Oh, they be like, man, what are these people talking about? But
if you know, you know.
But no, I would say that I would also say to get more confident. I don't know what your body type is. I would say work out.
Working out does help build your confidence.
And I'm not gonna lie, bro. A lot of times when you find a partner that you really like and you want to like your love for them wants you to do better at for yourself.
Yeah.
You'll get on your stuff.
You'll get on your Zoom.
And you'll want to do better so.
That's going to be a good clip. Clock that.
Yeah. You'll want to do better so you can provide in case you do have a kid. You're like, you probably are one of those guys that needs
a woman to kick it into gear. Yeah.
I think he needs that. But unfortunately, he's in the era. This is where, like, a lot of guys that used to call into the Godfather. Had all them issues. They are dealing with the women and saying, oh, you need 6 foot. You need to be six foot, six figures, however many other inches you like. You need all that. That's what they wanted for these guys. So they are dealing with them. But I would tell you to get out of superficial areas and go somewhere where people just want to make it work because you make $57,000. Now you go find you a woman that make $35,000,
$40,000.
Y'all almost had $100,000.
That's a lot better than, exactly, you just having $57,000 by yourself. And I don't like when people try to negate when somebody is making less than $75,000.
For sure.
Like, with two people. Because if two people are making $50,000, just like you said, that's $100,000. One person making $75,000, one person making $30,000, it still helps.
Yeah, period. I just think most people are just snooty. And they, it reminds me of, did you see on TikTok where this guy, I don't know if he's a pastor or something, but he pretty much started this whole trend of these different TikTok videos where he was saying classism is killing dating.
But I could see it.
It's a long way to go, but he was talking about how like women and men, like people think it's just the women, but it's also men. Like if they come from a certain family or they're a doctor or something, they only want to talk to these type of women and vice versa and all that. and how we're talking about, hey, some of y'all are the first people in y'all family to be probably making good money. Like, y'all can't really just be classes yet. Y'all didn't come from an elite family that had generations and generations of wealth. Get with somebody that can already take care of themselves. So, like, ladies, if this is a type of guy that's interesting to you, but you're not trying to pay him no mind, he's not a settler because
he and he's not a loser because he got a job. He's trying. He got some money saved up. He's just in a different area.
If he was anywhere else, he could live by himself. He would probably
be up for sure. And he just needs some support. I don't know what his social life is like. You know what I mean?
No, I really just...
He has a mentor. He probably needs a mentor.
He needs a mentor, but I just think his dad...
I'm dead.
No, I'm thinking his dad loves him a lot, and his dad doesn't have the heart to be like...
You got to get out and figure it out.
It's different from when I came up. Stuff was cheaper. That's why I was able to get this. And today's time, I wouldn't be able to afford to stay in California. I'll help support you any way I can. I think it's best that you leave the state. That's what he should tell his son.
I think sometimes, too, as parents, we hinder. Maybe not in this particular situation, but sometimes you do, as the parent.
You do hinder if you don't force your child to be uncomfortable. It out.
Exactly. Like, sometimes you need to be like, look, you've been staying with me for 5 years. It's time for you to figure it out. You need to go and figure it out. You need to be out by this date. Because if you don't let people figure it out, they'll never figure it out. Especially, he said he wants a wife. If you're going to be a leader of your household.
Yeah. And you still got time, bro. You still can get on your grind within the next, if you're 32, you got 8 years, bro. You still can get married at 40 and still have kids and everything. Like, my mom and dad started over again. My dad was 40. Now the kids is pretty much grown. I got a 21-year-old brother, a 20-year-old brother, and my little sister will be 18 this year. So you still got time to have kids and all that, but get yourself together first. So I know you probably don't never see this, but if it's somebody that's dealing with what this person's dealing with, and you got to be in California, the numbers ain't got to be saying. Maybe not making $27.50. Maybe you making $15.50, yeah. Whatever. The same thing going to go to this. You make it $15.50, go find you another part-time job that's paying another $10 an hour. Do that. You don't what Kevin used to say? You just need to, you don't need to be at home. You need to be able to just go home to
sleep
and shower. Mm-hmm. But that's what we call the three S's.
Yeah.
So that's what you need to do.
Get that money up, run it up. I will say though, I do feel like this might be a little bit of controversial, but I do feel like people from up north know how to run it up and stack bread. Not having these $80,000-$90,000 careers. Like, I know a lot of people back home, and honestly, it's a lot of women and men who know how to run up that bag.
No, for
working
sure.
Working at factories, working at Amazon, working at places like that. And I think it's either in you or it's not.
Well, I think what's happening with that guy is just, he's just in an area where, like, I put it like this. If he was making $27.50 in Shreveport, he could actually afford a house.
Back home, too, for sure.
So yeah. He's just in an area that he just
the can't thrive in. The cost of living is too high for him.
I'm not going to lie. It's a little bit like that out here now.
It is. It's crazy out here. And do you remember when you could go apply for a place and get approved today? Now it takes so long for you to be able to move somewhere.
Really?
Yeah. Because it's a lot of scams going on. It's a lot of fake check stubs. It's a lot of CDLs. It's a lot of CPN usage going on. So I think that it's important for people to understand that life is different in different areas. You might can go and be in one state and get approved today and move in. You might move somewhere else, and this is going to take you some time.
Mm-hmm.
And the requirements are different. They might want them bank statements. Them check stubs don't be enough because they've been getting finessed for so long.
Nah, that's facts, though. That's facts.
All right. I got another one about Disney. Disney paying $10 million over kids' data on YouTube. So this headline is kids, privacy, and big money. So Disney is set to pay $10 million after the government said that the company enabled the unlawful collection of children's personal data on YouTube. The big issue is that certain Disney videos that were directed at kids allegedly weren't properly labeled as made for kids. And that mislabeling allowed data collection from children under 13 and the use of that data for targeted advertising without the parental notice and consent COPPA requires. Now, what does that mean in plain language? So when content is made for kids, there are stricter rules, but federal regulators say Disney didn't consistently apply that label to kid-directed videos, and because of that, kids' data could be collected through YouTube's ecosystem and used in ad targeting. And yes, money is part of the story, too. The complaint points out Disney benefited financially because it earns revenue tied to advertising on those videos, including revenue from ads YouTube runs and ads Disney sells directly. Now, the consequence, besides the $10 million, a federal court approved an order that doesn't just take the money. It also requires Disney to put a compliance program in place so their YouTube uploads get reviewed and correctly designated going forward. And the settlement includes an injunction to prevent future COPPA violations tied to their YouTube content. So why should you care even if you don't work in tech? Because kids' content is a data pipeline, and a crazy one at that. If platforms and content owners don't label correctly, the system can start treating children like regular ad targets, and COPPA exists specifically to stop that without parents knowing. So this is basically saying don't build the bag off of kids' attention and then act surprised when the government asks how the data got collected. And if you're a parent, this is your reminder, your friendly reminder, that kid-friendly content doesn't automatically mean kid-safe. So, yeah, that's the headline.
Yeah, and for the people who probably aren't following, on the back end of YouTube, YouTube's going to ask you, hey, is this content for kids? You can select yes or no. Now, people with kids, you know YouTube has a separate kids app. Mm-hmm. So a lot of stuff that's marked for kids literally is only present on the YouTube Kids app. Now, there are videos that are marketed toward kids that are not marked for kids. Mm-hmm. And I say that because it's like that little thing she has on there, Pinky. These grown people will be playing with them and making them do all type of stupid stuff. But yeah, you know they are trying to get kids to watch it. Mm-hmm. But they probably don't have it marked for kids because you can search it on my regular YouTube versus find it on YouTube Kids. So that is one of those things. I think Disney should have known better, marketing stuff. Hey, this is for kids.
I do like that they forced them to create a compliance program, because a lot of the times people just get fined and then they don't really know what to do.
Yeah.
You know, I but like
YouTube is good on stuff like that for the most part. That the same way with like AI. When I upload, I say, hey, did I use AI making it? This is anybody image that's not supposed to be in here. They doing something they're supposed to do, like generate through AI. I have to select no. Now, you also use the AI now to make sure people not taking your content on YouTube and mm-hmm. repurposing it on YouTube and doing other stuff with it. So that $10 million is nothing for Disney to pay.
I want to explain what COPPA is for people who don't know. Mm-hmm. So COPPA stands for Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And it's basically a law that says that websites, apps, and online services cannot collect personal info from kids under 13 unless they follow strict rules. And the main rule is parental consent. So if the service is directed to kids or knows it has users that are under 13, COPPA kicks in for things like their name, email, phone number, their GPS, photos, videos, recordings, device IDs, any info combined with an identifier that can track a kid. So what companies have to do is basically post a clear privacy notice for parents, tell parents what data they collected and why, get parental permission before collecting, using, or sharing data, and then let parents have the ability to review or delete their children's data and keep that data secure, and don't keep it longer than it's needed. So that's just a little bit breakdown on what it was being referenced in the previous article about Disney.
Got it. Man, my prompt did not give me what I needed for.
Let me go again while you fix it.
No, I got it. I just want to read this kind of verbatim, at least topic by topic, because I'm not going to go into it long. But it was like the biggest cybersecurity. I don't know why I say the biggest cybersecurity and cyber attack stories of 2025. And I think they had a 15 of them on here. So. But number 15 is the Pornhub data breach. I did see people make some videos on that, I think, while we were, like, on break. Mm. And the Shiny Hunters extortion gang extorted Pornhub after stealing the company's premium member activity data from third-party analytics provider Mixpanel. The attackers claim to have stolen roughly 94 gigs of data containing over 200 million records of subscribers viewing, search, and download activity. They are threatening to release it unless an extortion demand is paid. One, two, three. Release them.
I wish that I could.
I'm like, shit, release it. I don't care. Oh, we covered this. Number 14, ClickFix social engineering attacks.
Yeah.
In 2025, ClickFix attacks became widely adopted by numerous threat actors, including state-sponsored hacking groups and ransomware gangs. What started as a Windows malware campaign quickly expanded to macOS and Linux with the attacks that install info stealers, rats, and other malwares. ClickFix social engineers attacks are web pages designed to display an error or issue, then offer fixes to resolve it. These errors could be fake error messages, security warnings, capture challenges, or update notices that instruct visitors to run PowerShell or shell commands to resolve the issue. 13 is the $1.5 billion Bybit crypto heist. I don't think we covered this one. And one of the largest cryptocurrency thefts ever recorded, attackers stole approximately $1.5 billion in Ethereum from Bybit's cold wallet in February.
Not Ethereum.
An investigation linked the theft to North Korea's Lazarus hacking group, and the FBI later confirmed the group was responsible for the attack. Researchers determined that the breach was conducted via a compromised developer machine belonging to a Safe Wallet developer, which was used in Bybit's wallet operations. Attackers used their access to the developer device to manipulate transaction approvals, which allowed them to drain the cold wallet. In addition to Bybit, other crypto thefts targeting exchange and wallets included an $85 million theft from Phoenix, a $223 million heist from Cetus Protocol, a $27 million breach at Big One, and a $7 million attack impacting thousands of trust wallet users. Okay. Did we cover the Oracle data theft attacks?
Oracle
was targeted in a widespread data theft campaign after the Clap extortion gang exploited multiple zero-day vulnerabilities in Oracle E-Business Suite. Clap exploited an unpatched zero-day flaw in Oracle E-Business Suite, tracked as CVE-2025-61882, to breach servers and steal data, according to CrowdStrike and Mandiant. Exploitation began as early as July, with data theft culminating in August. In October, the Clap extortion gang began emailing impacted businesses, warning them that the data would be leaked if a ransom was not paid. Number 11, DDoS attacks increase in strength. This is interesting because DDoS has had definitely kind of tapered off. 2025 saw record-breaking distributed denial of service attacks targeting organizations worldwide. Multiple incidents mitigated by Cloudflare demonstrated the increasing firepower of DDoS platforms, with attacks peaking at 5.6 TBBS, 7.3, 11.5, and later, dang. Much of this growth was attributed to the Asuru botnet, which emerged as a significant force behind some of the largest DDoS attacks ever recorded. Microsoft reported that Asuru leveraged more than 500,000 IP addresses and a 15 TBPS attack targeting Azure, with Cloudflare later reporting that the botnet was responsible for an even larger 29.7 DDoS attack. Yeah, that's crazy. Now, this is a big one. This is one that most people have seen. Number 10 is a rise in developer supply chain attacks. Cyber criminals are increasingly targeting developers by abusing open source packages and extension repositories, turning them into malware distribution sites. On NPM, attackers repeatedly showed how the platform could be abused to promote malicious packages. The Indonesian food campaign flooded NPM with hundreds of thousands of spam and malicious packages. More targeted supply chain attacks hijacked legitimate packages with millions of weekly downloads. One of the most damaging efforts was the Shai-Hulud malware campaign, which affected hundreds of NPM packages and was used to steal developer secrets and API keys. Ooh, this is a fun one. We definitely covered this one. Number 9, North Korean IT workers.
Definitely covered that.
In 2025, North Korean IT workers infiltrating Western companies became a massive identity threat facing organizations. The U.S. government says that these workers funnel their earnings to the DPRK regimen to fund its weapons program and other initiatives. Let's see if we talk about the money they made. I don't see it. Okay. Number 8, the continued Salt Typhoon telco attacks. That's you right there.
About that too?
First disclosed in 2024, the SOC Typhoon attacks continued through 2025, becoming one of the most damaging cyber espionage campaigns targeting global telecommunications infrastructure. The attacks are linked to Chinese state-aligned actors known as SOC Typhoon, who focused on long-term persistent access to telecommunication networks. Throughout the year, additional intrusions were attributed to the campaigns across multiple major providers in the United States and beyond. Number seven, AI prompt injection attacks. As AI systems have become embedded in almost all productivity tools, browsers, and developer environments in 2025, researchers have identified a new class of vulnerabilities known as prompt injection attacks. Unlike traditional software flaws, prompt injection exploits how AI models interpret instructions, allowing attackers to manipulate an AI's behavior by feeding it specially crafted or hidden inputs that override or bypass its original guidance and safeguards. Prompt injection attacks trick AI systems into treating untrusted content as instructions, causing models to leak sensitive data, generate malicious output, or perform unintended actions without exploiting flaws in the code itself. Several high-profile incidents demonstrated these new attacks. Funny, because this is one I covered, I think, in the episode I did. I forgot what my guy's name is. It's on the tip of my tongue. But it was the zero-click data leakers in Microsoft 365 Copilot, where especially crafted emails with hidden prompt injection exposed sensitive information without user interaction. Google Gemini was found to be vulnerable to prompt injection via email summaries and calendar invites that enabled phishing and data exfil. AI coding assistants and IDE tools were manipulated through injected prompts. A comment jacking attack abused prompt injection and Perplexity's. That's what one of the AI things I was thinking about. Perplexity's Comet AI browser to trick the system into accessing system data from linked services such as email and calendars. Ooh, stuff we talked about too. Number six, targeting help desks and social engineering attacks. In 2025, threat actors focused heavily on social engineering campaigns to target business process outsourcing providers and IT help desks to breach corporate networks. Rather than rely on software bugs or malware, attackers trick help desks into bypassing security controls and granting employee access to their account. Hackers associated with ScatterSpider reportedly posed as employees and fooled a Cognizant help desk into granting them access to the account. This social engineering attack became the focus of a $380 million lawsuit against Cognizant. Funny. Cognizant agent, how can I help you today? Cyber criminal. My password on Okta was not working. I'm going to have your password reset from my end right away. Okay, and we'll see how it's going to work. Following a brief hold, thank you. I'm extremely sorry for the long hold. So your password is going to be Clorox at 123.
Clap.
Cyber criminal, what's that? Yeah, it was Clorox at 123. Okay, yep. Want me to wear the phone while you're trying it? Yes, yes, please. Sure. And they say that's a transcript of the call, hacker, and service desk. That's crazy. It feels that easy.
No, it was. Just like them when MGM.
Number five. Okay, guys, these are some of the stuff. You got interviews coming up? Bring this list out, because these are going to be on the top 10 of probably like everybody's things that they want to target. Insider threats. Insider threats had a massive impact in 2025 with multiple high-profile incidents showing how employees or consultants with trusted access, whether intentionally abused or not revoked after termination, led to large-scale damage. Coinbase disclosed a data breach affecting 69,000 customers, which later led to the arrest of a former Coinbase support agent who allegedly helped hackers access their system. CrowdStrike disclosed that it detected an insider feeding information to hackers, including screenshots of internal systems. The insider was reportedly paid $25,000 by a group calling itself Scattered Lapsus Hunters. Insider activity was also impacted financial organizations with FinWise Bank, disclosing an insider-related breach affecting roughly 689,000 American First Finance customers. In another incident, a bank employee reportedly sold their credentials for just $920,000. I was used to it being so much money. They sold their credentials for less than $1,000.
I'm dead.
Which was
How
later
much?
$920.
Please.
Which was later used in a $140 million bank heist at Brazil Central Bank. Yeah.
Bye.
Insiders is one of the hard ones. Like, I'm surprised they didn't touch on the guys who worked at the
that company we just talked about,
the ransomware negotiators.
Yeah,
they just got charged with the cyber stuff of using black. What was it? I forgot what kind of ransomware stuff they were using, but they didn't even make that much money off of doing stuff that's pretty much killed their career.
Killed it. Never getting another job.
Number four, massive IT outages. In 2025, a series of massive IT outages disrupted services and platforms worldwide, demonstrating how dependent global commerce has become on cloud infrastructure. While none of these incidents were caused by cybersecurity breaches, the impact was so significant that they warned a mention in this year's topics. Mm-hmm. They had the Microsoft DNS outage. Google had one, AWS outage, Cloudflare outage. Salesforce data theft. Number three, Salesforce data theft. It's killing me. Number three, the Salesforce data theft attacks. There we go. In 2025, Salesforce became a frequent target of large-scale data theft and extortion campaigns as threat actors increasingly targeted the platform and its growing third-party services. So, yeah, they got hit by shiny hunters. It wasn't nothing too crazy there. Number two is 0 days. In 2025, zero-day vulnerabilities remained a widely used method to gain access to corporate networks for data theft, cyber espionage, and ransomware attacks. Network edge devices and internet-exposed services were primary targets for exploitation because they sit between the internet and an internal network. And so you've seen a couple with the Cisco ASA firewalls, Fortinet with FortiWeb, FortiVoice, Citrix, NetScaler, Avanti, Connect Secure, SonicWall, Crush FDT, SharePoint, ToolShell Flaw, and others. And number one, AI-powered attacks. AI became a helpful tool for attackers this year as they relied on large language models during intrusions to write and deploy malware. Security researchers and vendors report a growing number of attacks that use AI for faster exploitation, adaptive malware, and higher volumes of attack. Google warned of new AI-powered malware families observed in the wild, some of which dynamically adapt their behavior to the victim environment. The Singularity attack, which impacted thousands of GitHub accounts, highlighted how AI tools could be abused to automate reconnaissance and credential theft. Proof-of-concept malware such as PrompLunk ransomware used AI LLMs to aid in encryption, data theft, and attacks. In addition to malware, AI is now being used to speed up exploitation attempts. Tools like HexStrike are used to analyze and exploit known vulnerability rapidly, reducing the time and skill to exploit in-day flaws. Threat actors also release LLMs such as WormGPT and KawaiGPT, which allows cybercriminals to create AI-powered malware without the restrictions or safeguards. By the end of the year, AI was no longer experimental for attackers and had become another tool for speeding up development, automating attacks, and lowering the barrier to conducting them. That's a mouthful.
Well, I'll say this. If you've been tapped in, we done talked about 85 to 95% of those topics or those events that have happened this past year. So that just lets me know that we are bringing forth the things that are important and that you should know about. We're doing our research. I have another one, which is Warren County got hit for $3.3 million in a phishing scam. So Warren County, New York says it was the victim of a fraudulent phishing scheme that led to two electronic payments totaling $3.3 million being sent to a fraudulent bank account. According to the county, the transfers were $2.1 million on December 12, 2025, and $1.2 million on December 22, 2025. They say they realized something was wrong on December 23rd and then contacted law enforcement, local, state, and federal to investigate to try to recover the money. The county says investigators expect the $1.2 million payment to be recovered, and they're still trying to recover the rest. Now, what makes this story extra crazy is that reports are saying that the scam looked legitimate because it appeared connected to a real contractor the county had worked with. The fraudster allegedly posed as someone from that contractor and requested wire payment to a new account. The painful detail is that one report says that the contractor had sent a warning earlier in 2025 about phishing attempts like this, but the warning wasn't relayed to the treasurer's office, which are the people that are actually processing the payments. So this is important because this isn't someone that just kind of clicked on the link. This is business email compromise, where somebody is trying to impersonate a vendor to get you to pay a bill to steal that money. So if you don't have a strict process to verify banking changes, you can clearly lose money fast, as we see in this example, especially when it comes to wire transfers, which is why we say don't just trust that email, because it sounds professional. Scammers don't need to hack your network if they can actually hack your workflow. Now, some practical advice that you can take away from this is, if you pay vendors at work or in your business, never accept banking changes over email alone. 2, call the vendor using a new number, a known number. 3, require a second approval for wires over above a threshold. 4, use a hold period for new banking instructions before the first payment goes out. That's step 1. And number 5, log who verified it, when, and how, because the goal is to make fraud harder than what your normal process would be.
Yeah, and so in this case, this was a known vendor.
Yes.
So I think another thing too that can look on the operation side is, hey, let me go back and look. When's the last time we changed banking information for this vendor? How long have they been a vendor? Yeah. Who is the typical PLC?
I like the, like, this is kind of related, but like with a bank, like let's say you update your address. You can't order a new debit card for like a certain amount of days. Because what they'll do is they'll typically, it has to go through processing, but it's set so that things like that don't happen. So that I can't say, oh, I lost my card, get a new card today. You know what I mean?
Yeah, process. You, in order to do that, you would have to go inside and physically show them, hey, it's me and I lost it, so they can send it. And
which is the other like option, is to go in person.
I've told y'all on here before, this scenario, I've dealt with it, except it wasn't us. It was the other people that got the same way. Where they changed stuff without having a better process. They had trash IT and said, oh, yeah, y'all network environment is fine. When it took me 5 minutes to be like, nah, somebody, I looked at the whole email thread, they got played. We need to make a raise an incident and just let them know, hey, this would happen.
Yeah. That's terrible.
Yeah.
1.3? Woo! Or was it 2.3? I think it was 2.3. The first payment was 2. The first payment was 2.1. Bye.
The BlackBerry style returns. Clicks. Communicator in the $79 Snap-on keyboard. Clicks technology is doubling down on tactile typing. They just debuted the Communicator, a $499 smartphone. For the early bird people, you can get it for $399.
Oh, it's an actual phone. Wow. Yeah.
That essentially looks and feels like a modern-day BlackBerry. For those of you who aren't ready to switch phones, they also launched the $79 Snap-on mobile keyboard that brings physical keys to almost any smartphone. Why it matters. In the era of glass slabs, there is a growing nostalgia market for physical keys. The Communicator isn't just a phone. It's designed as a secondary work device with a 3.5-millimeter headphone jack, micro SD expansion up to 2 terabytes, and a silicon carbon battery. Oh, they taking it back.
What's crazy is this is
a steal.
I love it.
Is this just for nostalgia, or is it a legitimate productivity hack? And I can honestly tell you, a lot of people really want physical keyboards again.
Bring them back.
I love that this is a physical keyboard for this.
Oh, do you see how it looks?
Yeah.
Like, it goes both ways. That's cool. I'm here for it.
I'm going to get one.
But, you know, I did some research on this. So the people that on the actual the phone case that they had, the people who actually who helped build it used to actually work at BlackBerry. Yeah. A couple of them. And I think 2 of them.
BlackBerry was owned by RIM, Research in Motion. Yeah, one of our past guests on the show works for BlackBerry, and we actually got to have him back on.
Wait. Is this just the new keyboard?
What?
Is that it? Or no? Is that just the keyboard, or is that the phone?
That might be the phone. I feel like the keyboard is different.
Or is it a new keyboard? I think that's the attachment. I think this is the new keyboard, but that is the keyboard.
You're just going to knock down, what's my boy name? Hey, Auntie.
I don't want no smoke.
Killmonger. I couldn't think of his name. Clix is targeting professionals who want a dedicated device for messaging to avoid distractions of a main smartphone. The $79 Snap-on is the real winner. It's MagSafe and Qi2 compatible, has its own battery, and can be even used as a keyboard for VR headsets.
I'm not going to lie, I'm finna order it.
I know, I might get one too.
I'm going to get it for this. I'm going to get the case. But do they have it for the new iPhone? I like how you can.
I'm glad you said that, because I had another list. I don't know if I put it on here. It was like a top 15 thing, and I saw something you would like, and I need to see if I put that down on there. You can go. I'm looking for it, see if I put it on here.
So I have another one. So Arkansas using new tech to catch phone use in work zones. Put the phone down or pay up. So Arkansas is rolling out new work zone camera technology that can detect drivers using handheld devices like cell phones while driving through work zones. The Arkansas Highway Police are already using cameras in interstate work zones to catch speeding, and starting mid-January, those same systems will also flag handheld phone use in work zones. According to the AHP Chief Jeff Holmes, it's already illegal in Arkansas to use a handheld device in a work zone, but enforcement has been tough, so this tech is meant to make that law enforceable and keep workers safe. Now, before you start to panic thinking they're just going to be mailing tickets to everyone, they're stressing this is not ticket by mail enforcement. An officer has to be present to issue a warning or a citation. When the system basically detects a driver that's holding a device, it will alert an officer that's stationed downstream. Then that officer will be able to safely stop the vehicle after it exits the work zone. So drivers will also see signs letting them know they're entering a monitor work zone. And on the privacy side, the info they're putting out says data capture isn't retained unless it's used to issue a warning or a citation. RDOT's director, Jared Wiley, is basically framing it as safety first, another tool to protect workers, drivers, and officers in work zones. So work zones, as we know, are already stressful enough. The biggest threats are going to be speed and distraction. And if you have phones in your hand, that is a distraction with extra confidence. So this is basically just Arkansas saying we're done asking nicely. I'm not mad at it, because people don't be paying attention. Somebody ends up dead, losing a limb, something crazy, all because someone was seeing a text message on their phone. I don't really like the fact that it's looking all in your car, though. That feels a little bit invasive to me. But I get the point of it, but I don't really like it. But I get it. I get it, but I don't really like it. Because, like, what if you were passing a tablet to your kid in the backseat or something? Or yeah, anything?
I think everything will be nuanced. Like, you know, something like the Apple CarPlay and Android Auto, they got a mode that's like drive mode where it restricts what you can do. Yep. That's like sometimes I don't get certain notifications when my phone connected in the car.
So I don't have to check that to my phone. But, yeah, I know people who like that. You'll text them and they'll be like, I'm currently driving. That's so old to me.
It is, but you got to think about it. We did drive better when we have all these distractions.
We did. I'm not mad at it. I get it. But I don't like it.
I know people who will be texting the whole paragraphs while driving. Driving with their knees.
Same.
They just need to get the self-driving joints.
For sure. For sure. Because those be the same people that are swerving. Yep.
I couldn't find it, but it was a list of, like, tech gadgets. And one of them was, I got to figure out what phone I was on when I found it. It was a case for the iPhone. Mm-hmm. And it pretty much, right here, would be a reflection of your camera. So you can see what you're looking at with the back camera. So if you want to take a selfie with your friend, right here. And it had a micro SD card slot. So I was like, that's definitely good. Bruh, here they go. With these fake, hello, this is Aria from Amazon Recruiting Team.
Not texting you.
I'm finna tell them SYBAU. And then I'm finna report them as junk.
Yeah. Remember I had sent you that screenshot?
Mm-hmm.
I think about that often. That was a good day for me.
A mess.
I have one more after you go.
That's fine. I think I had one more interesting one on Reddit. Let's see.
I'm trying to figure out how you find stuff that you saved. We did this last time.
That's a long one. I ain't reading that one. Let me see this. So this was a guy. He says, this field worth getting into in your 30s. And I don't like when people position 30s like it's old. So he said, I'm 31, by no means old, but after years of doing warehouse and delivery work, I'm trying to take steps and move on to something better. I recently started the Google IT Coursera cert program, and I'm enjoying it so far. However, with the 50-hour work week and a young son, I'm only able to have an extended work study session of 1 or 2 times a week, sometimes 30 minutes here and there. While I'm enjoying it and we'll see it through, I'm curious as to what's really out there career-wise, not to mention what I should do next. As I notice, this simple Google IT cert likely isn't something that's going to mean much in the job market, and I'll need to go for something after this. With my age and lack of experience, what would you all recommend? What's after the initial cert? What are some IT paths I could take? Also, another question, less related, how is the AI boom affecting IT careers? I'm curious if I've chosen the absolute worst time to pick this path. So, I actually have a consultation coming up with a guy that work in the warehouse. And this will probably be some of the stuff I tell him. So I'm glad that he's doing that, but I typically get people off those certificates, because that's the other thing. People think these are certs. They're certificates. They're two different things. You're not going to see them listed. Is it itching?
No, I'm just annoyed because they are two completely different things.
But you're not going to see these listed on job requirements.
Yeah.
So I think that's where people get messed up at. I would say do something like, so my guy Cab Tech has an IT course on Udemy, or do the Course Careers IT joint from Josh Matacore. Get your portfolio, get in the help desk gig. You're in a warehouse. So I would say the help desk gig going to pay you at least $40,000 and above. That'll give you a solid work week where you're not working 50 hours no more. And now them extra 10 hours you have, you can upskill more, so you can go relatively within 6 to 12 months from $40,000 to maybe $80,000. And you can learn your different skills. So in the skills to learn, it's different. Like most help desks, you'll probably be doing stuff with resetting passwords. So learn a little bit about Active Directory, learn about Microsoft Outlook, Office 365, working on your typing, customer service, your soft skills. And there may be some other things you'll learn when it comes to permissions, role-based access, and identity access management. And so I'll say, get like a basic certification. What I'll say is, if you want to get A+, get it. But you don't have enough time to play with A+. So I would get Security Plus, and get something like one of the foundational cloud certifications. Those two should be decent enough to at least start getting you callbacks and build out your portfolio. Course Careers is good because I know they help you set up a ticketing system, and so you kind of have some type of experience of understanding how you could work on a day-to-day basis. And now, with the inception of Gemini, that's my go-to. I would try to say, hey, what are some things I would do day-to-day working at help desk? Help me create a roadmap to create projects to symbolize experience to put on my resume to try to get a role coming from the warehouse. And to be honest, a lot of stuff you do from the warehouse going to be operations-based. That's going to go into operations-based work that you're doing help desk.
Why do you like Gemini better? It does not do anything for me that I'd be trying to get it to do. Have you been using it for a while, though? Like, do you have the app?
Yeah. Are you using, I like it because I already have Google Workspace, right? So Nano Banana and all the stuff is already built inside of it. So all those different things I need to make for thumbnails and all that, I just curate images right there. Or I can do the Google a video maker, which of course you can do with ChatGPT, but I don't have to pay for the extra stuff because I already had a workspace.
Yeah.
And it's breaking stuff. Well,
you have the paid version.
Yeah, because it
comes with it.
You do too.
Yeah, I don't.
With your workspace thing, you really have it. So, like, I don't know if I showed you this, but this is what I have. So, where is it? So, for one of my interview preps things, right? This is like the prep I got. And this is like some stuff that it showed me because I needed to give me some stuff in layman terms, and then I started adding it to here. But it's just, I don't know. I think because it's more all right here and concise, I like it. I don't have to go out of the app. I think it's a difference too. I like using Copilot more on my Windows devices than I do on my Apple devices. Like, to me, Copilot works better on Word when I use it versus when I'm using Word on macOS. Mm.
like you're trying to make something sound like when better I'm or
when I'm prompting through, when I'm yeah. prompting stuff, it works better. And I have to do too much formatting sometimes when I'm doing it on the Mac OS versus when I'm doing it on there. So
yeah,
I think that's why I like it the best. But yeah, dude, you're 31. Like we told the guy earlier, that's 32. You can do the same thing. Like I said, if I was to say, like right now, if I do, what does the average warehouse worker make? So yeah, so average warehouse worker pay varies, but generally falls around $16 to $20 an hour. So that's $33,000 to $41,000. And I'm assuming that this guy could be making it. I don't know, but he's got to work 50-hour work weeks, and that's hard labor.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Oh, my God. On your body.
Yeah, so.
Not 40. 50?
Yeah, I mean, I do 50 yeah. and 60-hour work weeks.
You ain't doing no hard labor, though.
Yeah, true.
I ain't saying it makes it, because I hate getting into them debates.
I don't really care.
Please, I'm not here for that debate.
No, this is way easier.
But. Like, actually physically standing or just doing something repetitive, the same thing, that's a lot on your body.
You know how good I used to sleep when I used to do the concrete stuff with my pops?
Oh, yeah. You was just telling us about that.
I used to sleep good. And I didn't have to work out as much because that was my workout.
Yeah.
I drink a lot of water and Gatorade. That's why I don't see you. Hey, ladies, find your blue-collar man. But, yeah, you take them extra 10 hours that you got with your son or whatever, and now you upskill. And so now you go from 40 80, or you could look up and get more, and that could be your year to 2 year plan.
Yeah, so, I was gonna say, look at some community college courses as well.
I didn't do that because I know he don't have the most time. I think the goal is probably just to get him in help desk first, and then after that's when okay, cool. If you do get in the help desk and you want to stay there a while, get them to pay for your WGU or SNHU or wherever you want to go. So now you have your degree, you got your experience. And now you could possibly even do internships that pay you more than what you make in the help desk. And then that's how you start upskilling. It's a simple way. It's a strategic process, but it's not overnight. But anything's better than what you're currently doing, trust me. Or you wouldn't have posed the question to Reddit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have just a quick article I just saw on LinkedIn. It says, someone shared this. It says, caught a remote hire secretly working 6 full-time jobs. I don't even know where to start with this one, but I need your advice here. We hired this guy for a senior engineering role, great portfolio, nailed the interviews, references checked out. Within 2 months, I started getting little whispers from his manager that something's off. He's missing stand-ups, dodging video calls, pushing deadlines, but always has some perfectly reasonable excuse. Fast forward to last week, we find out he's not just overemployed, he's a damn legend of it. 6 full-time remote jobs, 6, including 2 of our direct competitors, all paying 6 figures. When we confronted him with this, he didn't even try to deny it. He said he'd systemized his life to handle multiple roles and didn't see why we'd care as long as he delivered. The thing is that what made us sus is that he wasn't delivering. The man was running a personal B2B subscription service, and we were just one of his clients. Now leadership wants to implement mandatory camera on policies, track keystrokes, and basically nuke what was left of our trust and remote flexibility, all because one guy decided to LARP as a one-man outsourcing firm. Another thing that we talked about all last year as well. I don't think it's fair, though, for that one person to spoil it for the bunch, and that can make the work culture less than ideal. For the people that have been there.
I don't think they should be doing the keystrokes thing. I mean, most people want you to put your camera on a little bit just to kind of, you know, interact.
I think that cameras on should be mandatory for certain things. Like meetings with your manager, meetings with your teams. You should have your camera on. People who never turn their camera on are suspicious to me.
So ever? And then I think where he messed up at is like, why are you taking jobs at competitors? And we know these are full-time, so you're not doing contracting stuff. And so, like, people like that are trying to get it over, and it's making it hard for other people. Like, 6
and,
is just...
And I was just going to say, that's just too greedy. That's just too greedy. That's too greedy. There's people out here who...
He would be better off serving if he said, hey, I got my own business. Let me contract for you.
And he's going to do some subcontractors.
And he get some people to work for him. Like, why not do that versus this? Now... You're probably going to get fired. They're going to tell the other people. So now you're going to lose a lot of them.
You think he's going to get sued?
No.
Just fired?
He could get sued. because he probably would have signed some stuff, but he definitely is getting over because conflict of interest. Like, that's one of the things you got to think about. When people ask me about being overemployed, I say, hey, do not work at a competitor at the same time. Mm-hmm. That's, I mean, you can do it a little bit.
It reminds me of when we were just talking to Leander, and he was saying how when he was working with Adobe and stuff.
Yeah. That, and you got to think about it, too. That's why I tell people, they be trying to rush right into overemployment. I'm like, well, you need to master one job first and see what your schedule allows. Because if you got to push all these means, like, that's what this person probably could, with just two or three, he probably could just not, he can navigate it.
Yeah.
But when you got six, oh, I got a meeting here today, or this, like.
And you
got
to think, more than two or three of those meetings are going to overlap, especially stand-ups.
Yeah.
Stand-ups typically happen around the same time.
That's when people are going to be starting. See, on your own computer is different, because you can have your little avatar that kind of look just like you, and you can talk with it at the same time, but not really be in the meeting. Like, people got these laptops all around, and they just doing that. But I'm like, some of stuff just overkill, because you working so hard. You want to enjoy the money.
I was just about to say, you're not enjoying the fruits. You're not enjoying the fruits at all.
Like, but I think it's better if you could possibly, you know, have maybe like two or three joints that's paying like $150 a piece. Like, you straight. I mean, I'm fine with that, because if it's more task based, then cool. But if it's more client facing and all these meetings, yeah, tough sledding. That's how I feel about Mr. Man. I think he's doing too much. Let me see. One of them, these are like some couple quick ones, because I put this on there and I guess we'll talk about it, was the ex-Intel engineer who stole 18,000 files. Intel is suing a former engineer, Jianfeng Luo, who allegedly stole 18,000 confidential files, some marked top secret, just days before he was laid off. The twist is, Intel security systems actually blocked his first attempt to use an external hard drive, but he allegedly came back 5 days later with a different device and successfully bypassed them. He has since vanished.
Vanished is crazy. No, for real.
When people lose their jobs, the risk of data theft skyrockets. And that is why a lot of times...
That's why they'd be revoking that access immediately. And I know... I understand the human part of being the person that is getting, you know, losing their job, and you feeling like, dang, y'all didn't even give me time to say bye, to send an email or whatever, but this is why.
Let me see some stuff about what they may didn't include in this, because I'm interested to see how were they able to come back to what? Did they return that device? Like, how were they able to even get this, this stuff? Let's see. Okay, so they sued him. He reportedly stole the top secret files from the company after he was fired in July. So let's see when this actually happened. This article came out November of last year. He started working in 2014 as an engineer specializing in electronic design automation tools. However, the 18-page lawsuit says Intel fired him in July. It's unclear why he was terminated. Intel didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. However, the company uncovered evidence that Luo engaged in theft of trade secrets. I want to bet that he came up with some of them things. And, of course, you know, technically the company owns that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I know he was like, if you've been working there for...
He said, I'm leaving with something.
2014 to 2025, so pretty much over a decade.
I was just going to say, more than 10 years.
He was like... What my boy Denzel say on training day?
I'm leaving here with something. Mm-mm. No,
he
what?
Said, yeah, okay, all right. Y'all want to play it like this? 24-hour lockdown. But it's crazy how he vanished. As an engineer, Luo had sent access to sensitive files concerning development of technologies and products at Intel. The lawsuit added, he allegedly attempted to download the confidential files to an external hard drive on July 23rd. So when he was fired, let's see. He was fired in July, but it's not saying when he was fired. It just said July. So I'm assuming that he was fired probably at least on.
But I mean.
On the 23rd, I'm assuming he was probably fired that day. On July 28th, He tried again using a NAS device, and successfully downloaded the files according to the lawsuit.
My thing is, how is he able to download the files?
I'm trying to see it, exactly.
Clearly, their account lifecycle process is not that good.
Because I'm pretty sure he went to the NAS and then he just copied the stuff over. No DLP. Let's see.
I ain't gonna eat it.
So it didn't prevent it. Intel's internal IT system detected a file transfer, which triggered an investigation, and the company identified Luo as the source of the downloads. Intel also says it tried to repeatedly contact Luo, who is based in Seattle, about the download of files. However, the former employee hasn't responded so far, despite Intel having mailed numerous official letters. That's raising questions about his current whereabouts. I don't know what type of name Luo is, but I'm assuming he was Asian. And so he probably just didn't went overseas and took that back to China. Number two, if he had access to top secret stuff, you were supposed to get notifications every time he accessed these things.
Literally.
Because it's going to say, hey, why were you looking at that today? There's supposed to be some stuff for why you was accessing this information.
And you don't work here.
That's how identity access management works.
Why can he still access it?
But I'm not surprised.
Why can he still access it?
Because
it's the bigger question.
Threat model for somebody saying, okay, I can't use an external hard drive. I'm going to use my NAS that I got access to, and I'm going to copy it on over. And just similar, because this happens too, like when people try to extract data out of a cloud environment, he probably didn't do a whole bunch of stuff at one time. Like, it probably just little by little. And that's how it happened. And he was like, oh, cool.
Still.
He probably got a prompt about it, but it still let him do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
and he knew the security was tacky.
And there should have been an alert saying, hey, we have an alert where this I'm trying to see how he still had access to his systems if he was fired already.
That's what I keep, hello, what ain't clicking? That's the part that don't make sense
but
to
I'm
me.
Not surprised, though. McAfee literally was just like Intel, except slightly different. So I ain't surprised. So y'all be making people interview and have all these hard interviews, and the most simplest things y'all can't do, somebody done got y'all.
Lesson learned, but they clinked. What movie is that from? Madea.
That's a
clink.
Diary of a Mad Black Woman. But yeah, she was like, what you gonna say when the boy come talk to you? Clink.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
She was like, I'm my friend Kelly. She's like, better not be our Kelly.
Was she going like this? Or did I make that up? Was she going like this?
That's, I don't know. I can't
clink.
Remember.
I'm finna go back and watch it.
I've been listening to, you like The Weeknd?
Yeah.
You know he got that song, Die For You?
I love that song.
But you know what song that's inspired by, right?
What?
Just think about it. You don't know?
No.
I'm going to play it for you real quick. But I'm only going to do a little bit of it, but I'm probably going to take this part out of the show because I'll be getting them copyright things.
Man, I'm mad. I'm disappointed in him because he do have some bangers. For sure.
I mean, he was a person that needed help from a child that never got it. To
he
be
had
totally
a step
honest.
In the name of love. Everybody.
I ain't never stepped in the name of love.
Yes, you
I would
did.
Just watch.
Now what I'm actually doing.
You never stepped. Is you a stepper?
I'm not a certified stepper.
Are you a snapper?
What's a snapper?
Okay, it's like if you go out, right? You at the club, you turn. What type of guy are you? No. Are you going to like rap the whole song? Are you going to rap a verse? Or are you
it
too
depends.
Cool?
I probably would rap a song. I mean, if it's my song, I like, yeah. It depends on how lit I am, too. It depends on what type of...
This is a good question because I've been asking people this lately, and this has been cracking me up.
And it depends on how good of a time I want to have. But see, now I feel like if I'm out, I don't need to have that good of a time because why am I having that good of a time?
What?
No, think about the conversations we've had in the past about losing your voice and stuff. It's like, why are you losing your voice?
Well, that's the best part. If I didn't lose my voice, I did not have a good time.
Exactly. But I'm saying, why you had so much fun when you weren't around me? That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah.
So this is one you actually just talked about. It was like remote workers, turn your camera on, doing memes. I didn't watch this video yet.
TikTok.
If you're a remote worker, why is it so hard for you guys to turn your camera on? Like, I can't get my head around this. You work remote, you're in a meeting. Now, I understand if it's like 100, like all hands, but if you're in a meeting, like if you throw something on my calendar or I throw something on yours and you accept it, my camera is going to be on. Yours needs to be on too. And that's not a boomer thing. That's not a control thing. It's a common courtesy thing. It's a connection. Because when your camera's off, it's hard not to assume that you're just not paying attention, or you're not prepared, or you're not engaged, or you don't care. That's what you're telling the person on the other side. So why is it such a big deal for you guys when we ask you to turn your camera on? We being leadership asking our direct reports to turn their camera on during a meeting. What are you hiding? What do you not want me to know? Because you actually make yourself look a lot more guilty when you keep that camera off than you would if you had your camera on, but you looked down at your phone every now and then, or maybe you were eating a sandwich. I don't care about that stuff. So someone weigh in on this and tell me why it's such a big deal to have your camera on in meetings.
For a lot of people, it's a problem because they found out at the last minute that they need to turn that camera on. So they didn't come to that meeting prepared, like, this is going to be a cameras on thing. Like, when I join calls with, like, my mentors and, like, teammates or friends at work, I do turn my camera on just to be more personable. I feel like I started out anti-camera, and then I'm like, it's boring, especially when that kind of becomes, like, team meetings, why the camera's not on?
So I found a compromise, like, for stand-ups and stuff. I use my avatar on Teams. Mm-hmm. Now, for one-on-ones with my manager or director, I'm on the camera.
Yeah.
But for that, I'm like, it's only like, sometimes it's only 2-3 minutes.
I think it also plays a lot in the manager's team, the team's culture as well, because if your manager doesn't require that of you, then they start to get in the fickle now where nobody's turning them on except for them. So I think it's just a good rule of thumb, especially if you're meeting with leadership or if it's an urgent conversation, it's important to put a face to name. I'm even okay with people turning the camera on and then turning it off. I'm even okay with that.
Yeah. After
like if let's say we on a call and I'm introducing you and this is not your call, I'm just introducing you and you pop on camera and be like, hey, I'm so-and-so, and you pop off. I even think
yeah,
that's
I'm good.
Acceptable.
Like, there's some times where we're on camera and then eventually somebody's coming to do a presentation or something. Like, listen, I got work I need to do. Because, mm-hmm. like, a lot of times when I'm doing, when we're on our stand-ups, we just getting to work. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times we are trying to get up to speed what's going on. And so we're really not looking at the camera. We are doing work. So for me, I'd rather turn the avatar on for that because, like, what's the point of me just be looking around and this is not, like, you're talking back and forth to me, so.
But I do feel like sometimes people feel like they look crazy because I feel like that's one of my reasons because sometimes I do be close to the screen. Like, sometimes I'll forget that the camera's on because I'll be so close, you know, looking at the different screens mm-hmm. that I have. But I do think that it's important to turn your camera on periodically, for sure.
And then let's see. This is actually a cool one.
Make a choice. Make a choice.
2002, make
this
a choice.
Ain't easy. This ain't easy. What first came to mind is what did I play more, especially with my friends? GameCube, I played a lot. Double Dash, Melee, but I kind of forgot the games I played by myself. PS2 is the choice. GTA, multiple. Kingdom Hearts, 1 and 2. God of War, 1 and 2. And that's just a few, because by myself, I played hours upon hours of great games.
If I'm going to make a choice,
I'm picking a PlayStation only because that's what I grew up on.
So personal preference would be GameCube because that's what I played the most.
Really?
But honestly, it would be at that time, it would probably be out of Dreamcast and PS2. And leaning more on the PS2 because of how good it did. And then right after that, honestly, would probably be Xbox because Xbox, Halo, and I forgot what else it came out with.
I wish I had more exposure to the Xbox controller. Because, like, I love my Xbox, but I told you I'd be struggling.
It's the
I
same
be,
thing.
No, it's not. It is not the same. My character be running around in a circle, and I don't be trying to do that. It's difficult. More difficult to me.
I don't know. I mean, it's the same thing. I'm clear to run around in a circle. Now they can show you how to play. I actually been thinking about, like, low key, like, I got that new TCL joint I got was not expensive. It was like 3-something. Mm-hmm. 50, I think I got a 50 inch for 3-something. And it's really a high quality TV for that price. Surprisingly, like, 4 years ago, that TV would have been like $600. But I've been thinking about getting the TV for in here. Mm. Like, putting it like right here or behind you or somewhere. Cause they got one mounted on their wall over there.
10 out of 10.
Let's see, what's this?
Being black in corporate America, you operate under a different rule set. And unfortunately, most people find this out the hard way. I realize that I can't get too personal with none of my coworkers or my bosses. Anything you say or do will get used against you in the court of corporate America. I realized when I became too personal, it was taken as me being unprofessional. So I swung the complete opposite direction. I didn't talk to nobody at work. I didn't open up about myself at all at work. I just did my job and then I went home. Which is very effective if you don't want to get fired. But if you ever want to improve in a company or get a promotion, that's not going to work. And I had to realize a lot of corporate America isn't about how good you can do your job. It's how good can you handle people. Because unfortunately, the more likable person will most likely get that promotion. So I had to find a happy medium. I realized I had to become likable, but not share too much about myself or talk about me at all, really. So now, whenever I talk to the higher ups in my company, I always ask them questions about their personal life. And funny enough, they love to talk about it. And by the end of it, I didn't say anything about myself and they leave the conversation like I'm a good person, like they all love me now.
Yeah, that's facts, because you can't.
Yeah, you can't tell them that you was in the section till 2 a.m. turned up last night.
And you can't just act like you don't want to talk to nobody. It's like, man, he's like, because people cookie. Like to recommend people they like to work with. So Lee was asking me, he was asking me some stuff about work and like whenever I probably find somewhere else to work at. And I was talking about like a coworker I worked with at three companies. He's like, how y'all do that? I was like, every time I went
you
somewhere,
bring them.
They needed somebody
you
else.
You know what's crazy is I have a teammate that's like that. I think they've been working together for like 20 years. That's dope.
Yeah, because I mean, it's hard to find. Like, my first sadness was when one of my
work
friends and work mentor, Ron, when Ron got a new job. So I was like, dang. And then when I got laid off, it sucked. But when they was hiring, I was like, yo, I know this guy. They said, yeah, bring him. Because this was so, here was, this is something we ain't talked about a lot. We always talk about remote work. Here was the benefit of being, when people are hiring for a certain location in office, and there's not a lot of people with the skill set. So I was like, oh yeah, my boy that work at so-and-so up the street, he perfect. Okay, tell him to apply. And he ended up getting hired. Because he was already in the area. Like,
and especially when you can vouch for somebody that you know is going to come and do good work and great things for the team versus somebody that's not.
Facts. And then here's the last one. I feel like we're just going to make this his own.
In the workplace, there's a lot of people who don't like the fact that you have an identity outside of the position that you hold. Why? Because their identity comes from the position that they hold. They don't believe that they're nothing more than this position. Meaning when they go home, who are they? They don't think they're much. But when they clock in, they're the CEO. When they clock in, they're the vice president. When they clock in, they're the middle manager. They have a title. They have a sense of purpose. When they go home, they're like, oh my gosh. And they do not like the fact that you have a sense of identity outside of your job. They don't know what to do with you when your job does not identify you. The reason why is because their job identifies them. And they cannot imagine, because that's where they are, they cannot imagine someone else having a sense of identity outside of that, because they don't. Does that make sense?
I agree. Okay. And
I think it's important to separate the two.
That's a slippery scope of, one, not like the guy was talking about, not talking about too much what you got going on outside of work, mm-hmm. and two, not leveraging where you work at as your identity.
10 out of 10.
And stuff Agreed. That connect you to that workplace. Yep. And you leveraging it to get you opportunities, because that's going to breed resentment. Mm-hmm. It always does.
I agree.
And we've seen this happen.
I think it's important to have a good balance and separation between the two, for real.
Yeah.
We've talked about that a lot.
Yeah, for sure.
Your digital footprint is crazy.
But yeah, I mean, and that's why I think one of the ones we reacted to, they were talking about, that's the reason why a lot of the white men want to come back in office, because that's where they're kings, because the kids don't like them, they don't like their wife and all this stuff, and they want to come back in the office. But I mean, nah, it is. I mean, most men find purpose in their work. versus, you know, they just work. They don't really know. Like, you got people that don't got hobbies or what they like to do or nothing they're really passionate about. Identity is, hey, I'm a mortgage banker. I do this or that. This is what I do. This is me. So when I can't work, I feel like I'm not useful or I'm not making money. I feel like, so he's definitely right. So you just got to kind of walk through that and kind of just have your own identity and not let nobody, you know, play with you with what you got going on. So that's how I feel about that. And we didn't have any, we didn't have a famous quote that we got a chance to write up there today. And I forgot, like, what's one you got on the top of your head if you could think of one right now?
My favorite quote is, if you don't like something, let me look it up. Bye. Let me say it right. This is my favorite quote. Let me say it right. Because I'm going to mess it up. But it's by the late and great Maya Angelou.
Let me see if I found your part.
Okay. It is, if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. Live, breathe, and die by it. There's a lot of things that I don't like, and if I can't do something about it, one thing I can control is my attitude. So that's my quote starting off the year. If you don't like how you living, do something about it, period. Get in the field.
Let me see.
You about to say something funny from a movie.
Oh, man, this is funny.
I'm gonna try to.
That's funny.
What?
You know, one of the low-key classics is Blue Street.
I love Blue Street.
And you know, Martin going there and...
Social engineering.
When Martin say, put your hands on the noodles. And Dave Chappelle say, chicken or beef? Chicken.
Did you watch his latest stand-up?
I'm not finished with it.
It's so good.
He said, that guy, Logan, owes me $50,000, and if I don't get it soon, I'm talking.
I'm dead. But that knife. Did you watch John Cena's last fight?
I'm not the biggest John Cena fan.
Wow.
He came into prominence once I, like, actually stopped watching wrestling. Like I said, I used to like his Word Life. This is Basic Thuganomics. Like, I remember some of that stuff.
Immediately.
Why not?
Immediately.
I like that part. No. And let me double check.
He had on denim shorts. He just looked like... He looked like John Cena still. Like, it was nostalgic, but I was not happy that he lost. Not happy. Why not? How do you lose your last fight, bruh?
It's called putting somebody over. Oh, we didn't have any new voicemails. But appreciate everybody who's came to the end with us. We had some stuff we didn't get to cover. Just be on the lookout. Stay tuned. Join the subscriber list. We will start going live. Soon, we're going to figure out a day, and we're going to communicate that to y'all so everything will be live, and then you guys can interact with us in real time, and I think that's going to be really fun for 2026. But until next time, let's stay textual, and we out. Peace.